Talk Shoe.
Recorded live.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the program on a Sunday night. Hey, Timmy, it feels like winter outside.
Oh, good God. I should have bought my Christmas tree early. I really should have.
I have it some. Oh, I want a real tree. That's what you said. Oh, that's right. I'm moving to somewhere that has a real tree. Oh, yeah, that's right. All right. Welcome, folks, indeed, to another episode of the program. Me with Timmy Rosenthal here on a Sunday night talking NHL hockey, fantasy hockey, and more. If you're wondering why we're doing this as an early time, well, look, we all have our vices in life. Timmy, for example, wants to watch the Patriots kill the Colts by at least 39 points or more.
At least.
Me, I just want to see as many Chicago Cubs injured as possible. No, 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 that's not it. I just want to beat the Cubs. That's it. That's all I ask.
Injury Ninja, on the other hand, is not as nice.
No, he's not. He's definitely not. Has not been all week. But, look, we have a lot to get to. The good thing about today is it's kind of a spread out five-game schedule. There's a break in the action, which is a little strange to get used to, considering last Sunday there was one game on Uno. Today we had, let's see, how weird is this? You had a 1 o'clock game today. You have a 3 o'clock. You sprinkle in some other crap. Then later on tonight there's a 9 and a 10 o'clock game.
And then an 8 o'clock game as well.
Yeah. 1, a 3, an 8, 9, and a 10. I get football and everything, but why would you have – I mean, look, I want to see if Connor McDavid can actually have the balls to show up for a second game in a row. Yeah, that's right, I said it. I wasn't impressed last night. Calgary. Calgary's not very good in the early going, and I'm not surprised why.
They have so much hype going into the season, and I think it's catching up to him a little bit. Plus, there's a couple of new pieces that they're bringing in as well.
Goaltending, yeah. Goaltending hasn't been very good.
And their concerns going into the season.
Team defense was another concern. They don't possess the puck the most, actually. Although that's improved slightly, and yet still worse. Again, it's been a problem, will be a problem.
And T.J. Brody and Smed being out doesn't help things.
No, and look, Ladislav Smed is not the greatest defenseman in the world, but he's a stabilizing, bottom-pairing defenseman that you do kind of need on this team. And look, T.J. Brody is
at least one stay-at-home defenseman, though, and that's what he is.
Right. You need one with this team. And again, we said it before, Timmy, Calgary needs pretty much average goaltending to win, and they're not getting that right now. You know, they need goaltending in the range of a 912 to a 915 save percentage to win most nights. They don't need, for example, they don't need Corey Schneider to stand on his head or a goalie to stand on his head. They just need average, and that should work most nights. But with them, it hasn't. And the numbers are ugly. I mean, look, we're gonna throw some fun numbers from War and Ice at people tonight, and you're just going to go, ugh.
We're going advanced, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. Yes, we are. And not just because my daily fantasy team last night in one league stunk and on FanDuel naturally won like $75. So, yeah, I should have stuck with my roster that I was going to go with. But see, kids, it's like erasing the right choice and going, oh, no, that other one looks really good, and then realize you screwed up. Interestingly enough, some things from today's games that nobody should be surprised by. Obviously, look, how do I put this? The Corsi battles were epic. No, but all kidding aside, the Calgary game from last night, Edmonton dominated on the road, mind you. Okay, that's something to note. Edmonton, first off, scored how many goals last night? 5. Mm-hmm. Needless to say, they had not scored very many goals. Wait a minute. Wow. So bad I had a sneeze.
Me too.
But you looked at the numbers last night and went, wait a minute, five? And yeah, really. I mean, look, Calgary's not that, again, not that good. Cary Remo, I don't know what he was thinking on at least two of the goals. Look, you know, between Remo and Heller right now, it almost doesn't matter who is starting. I'd give Ordeo a shot at this point. Why not? I mean, I don't know what you do. I just don't think either goalie is all that. Heller was rumored to be traded. I think he was nearly traded, and something happened, and they pulled back on it. And Heller just doesn't look interested. Ramos too inconsistent. And there's a lot of chaos and craziness to it last night. You know, and that's not the only team that obviously is in a, you know, is in a desperate situation as it is. There's teams that are actually in worse situations, as hard as it is to believe. The biggest one being the Columbus Blue Jackets, Timmy.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
every time we pick them to do well, they start up with.
You're right. God, 2 years ago. Well, 2 years ago, to be fair, we got it right.
Yes. But they did kind of struggle a little bit early on.
They struggled early on. That was the kind of the pattern, to be fair.
Yep.
Last year, we had Rick Gethin on from now Rick is doing work for I think Fox Sports Ohio and today's Slapshot. But we had Rick on, and we thought that Columbus could challenge legitimately for the division if they stayed healthy, and then we saw what happened, and they missed 500-plus man games, lost to injury. And, well, I mean, at least they had that 9-0-1 end to the season, and it gave people hope. They got Brandon Saad in the offseason. You figured you'd get a healthy year from this guy and that guy. And then the revelations came out that Jack Johnson indeed caused himself to go bankrupt, and it wasn't completely his parents. Something weird happened between the end of the preseason and the regular season. And Columbus has just been stuck ever since. The offense is okay for the most part. But the defense has just been horrendous. I mean, you look at last night, Chicago had a good bit over 60% Corsi rating. And their Corsi close was just insane. You know, even strength. And really, whatever Chicago wanted to do, they could do at will against Columbus last night. Columbus only scored once. Obviously, Chicago had a pretty easy night. You know, Kane and Panarin teamed up twice. You get the idea. It wasn't fun. And yet, you look at it, it's hard to believe that this team has given up 31. I thought this was a misprint. They've given up, what, 31 goals? 31. Their goal differential, Timmy, is minus 17 already. It might
take five goals a game and scoring right around two.
It might take Anaheim a month to score 17 goals. No. They'll figure. It might take the Devils a month to score 17 goals. There we go. That's better. But it's not good. There was a Columbus dinner, I think, a sort of team dinner event tonight that was canceled.
That's how bad it is.
Okay. Now, I want to throw a few other things out there, interestingly enough. It does not appear that John Tortorella has been asked for permission for anything yet. That's one part of this. Mike Keenan was relieved, I believe, either late yesterday or this morning, you know, time difference aside, of his job at Metallurg in the KHL. By the way, that team won the Gagarin Cup 2 years ago. And it only lost two games in a row, mind you. That's the strange part in this. So you have to wonder at least a little bit what may or may not be going on, or if John Davidson is indeed looking for a new coach. but I wouldn't be shocked. A lot of Columbus people had asked what would happen first, a win, a trade, or a firing. And honestly, I really did think they were going to win a game first. Look, it wasn't going to be Chicago, but I figured that, look, Chicago, it's kind of an unfair spot. You're coming in, it's the champs and everything else, and you didn't expect Columbus to win. But you expected Columbus at least to show up a little better than they did. And then you have quotes coming out like the goal, you know, when goalie says, "I have no confidence right now." And basically, he's not saying it directly, but he's saying, "I have no confidence in the team defense in front of me right now and myself, but particularly the team defense."
And that is not a good sign. And I think he was very accurate about that assessment.
Yeah, I do think that's what he was meaning to say. It wasn't that it was just him. It's in general. And you saw a couple pitchers kind of filter out from the Columbus locker room last night. People, their heads held over, you know, people, towels looked like they were crying practically. Not good at all. It really is an ominous sign there. And if you go through history, I think there was one team in the history of the league that was 0-5 that made the playoffs. It's not good. It's not good to start off this poorly. It just isn't. You have to get off the schneid somewhere. And so maybe the silver lining, and the only silver lining for Columbus right now, is the fact that nobody's running away with the Metropolitan Division. It's not quite the juggernaut people expected. And look, it wasn't even the best division in the league anyway. It's just people thought maybe it was the second or a distant second from the Central. And yet, Timmy, turns out, well, what do you know? Maybe not. Because I have some other fun stats that I aim to show tonight in my evidence, as they say. But it's funny to look at this stuff and go, God, Todd Richards, last year, everything looked good at the end of the season. It looked like he could be an early Jack Adams candidate going into this year. And no.
And now he, oddly enough, is on the short list of coaches who could be canned.
I just think he's gone.
Yeah.
I really do.
Maybe he probably at this point doesn't make it. It's probably going to be one of the first fired, I have a feeling. And
Timmy, he might not even make it through tomorrow.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're – all right, look, if they're canceling a team-mandated dinner event like they did, whatever, you know, it's allegedly it was a dinner or something or whatever. But if you're canceling something like that, something is brewing, usually. Now, what we'll do really fast is go through headline time, as we often do. Timmy, Patrice Bergeron, how I love thee in fantasy.
Especially on the power play.
All he does is power play. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, well, he does shorthanded time, too.
Shorthanded times, too. But, look, two goals in the third period. You know, Bruins did hold on to win last night in a game that was all sorts of weird. It looked like Boston was going to actually run away with this game in the third period. And then, well, Arizona did Arizona things.
Mm-hmm.
Tied it. And then Boston came back. Look, Arizona's discipline. Look, Arizona, I watched the third period of the Arizona game. It looked like the third period of the Winnipeg game today. Same exact thing. Both teams are close. They're right there. They're young. And then they start committing penalties. And when you commit penalties like that, Arizona's penalty kill could not stop Boston's first power play unit. It was that simple. And it was, you know, it was just enough for Boston to hold on. Tuukka Rask, let's be honest.
That first power play unit, I believe, has combined points.
I think
17 or 18 points.
I think in power play efficiency, as far as lines, Boston's first unit is number one in the league right now.
Yep.
I think Detroit is. I believe Detroit is just behind them. Yeah, don't go by the team stats, kids. But you know, there's a few things in here. Obviously, you know, the Islanders rallied last night in a wild game, in, you know, against San Jose and beat them 6-3.
Martin Jones, don't try to deliberately take off your helmet.
Was that Jones or was that?
No, that was Stalock. That's Stalock.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that was the second goal the Islanders scored, I believe.
Yeah, it's the second goal, and that was Alex Stalock. So Martin Jones, take a lesson from Alex Stalock. Don't take off your helmet.
I'm standing there in line to go through the traditional haunted hayride of terror that I go on every single year. Because I do this around Halloween. It's fun. There's that. There is actually a zombie paintball run, along with this. It's classic stuff. Or you can sit there and shoot 150 paintballs and hit zombies. It's a good deal. It is the most therapeutic $25 I've ever spent. But all kidding aside, I heard this and couldn't believe it. I thought maybe my phone battery was dying, but it wasn't. Just things like that in general. Chicago, we talked about. Timmy, so Nicholas Backstrom came back last night, and it looked like he never left.
Weird how that works out sometimes.
Yeah, you know, 3 points.
When you're coming back against Carolina, you can kind of...
Hey, we're ahead of Carolina now. There's progress here. wait, that's bad. But, yeah. You're absolutely right. Caps had a pretty easy game for the most part last night, and managed another win. McDavid's two goals helped the Oilers win last night. Obviously, if you didn't see the near third goal that he had, ironically that Hiller saved, just YouTube it. He almost had a hat trick. He was so close. Then there's this. You know, obviously, you know, congratulations on Ben Bishop for breaking Nikolai Hobbyboom's Tampa franchise goalie win record. I think he has. When your team's franchise record is less than 100, it means you've had some changes in the last couple days. But congratulations nonetheless. Like we said, the Canadians moved to 6-0 with a rather suddenly convincing win over the Detroit Red Wings last night. I looked up in the midway through the second period, it was scoreless, and then all of a sudden in the third period it was 4-1, and I'm like, oh, I must have missed something. But here's something that's near and dear to Timmy Rosenthal's heart. I figured you would appreciate this, Timmy. The Penguins did beat the Maple Leafs 2-1 last night. Obviously, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury in net for Pittsburgh. Evgeny Malkin scored, et cetera. You know, Pittsburgh went up 2-0 pretty quickly. Leafs scored a goal late in the first period, and that was it. Now, as a sort of betting man, Timmy, if it's 2-1 with still almost 7 minutes left in the first period, don't you expect that game to end like 5 or 6-3 or something like that?
Yep.
It didn't. Something else that you had to kind of sit there and scratch your head on. Guess who has a milk carton now?
Did he formally play for said team that the Penguins played against last night?
Almost, but his line mate actually has a milk carton now. Yep, somebody from Pittsburgh. Created a Sidney Crosby milk carton last night. I saw it on Facebook. It went through Twitter and social media pretty quickly. This has to be the oddest story, and yet I said this early in the season. Sidney Crosby, God is my witness, is not getting 100 points this year. Timmy, I might have went a little extreme here.
Yep.
0 points, 7 shots on goal, only 2 scoring chances in 5 games played.
As he goes, so do the Penguins. I kid you not.
It is weird that Pascal Dupuis was injured just before the start of the regular season, and Crosby is struggling.
Yep.
It does seem like every time Dupuis is out, the Penguins struggle.
Yep.
And
by the way, other alarming statistics. Yes, I know their power play has struggled over the years. And with that lineup, they shouldn't struggle. With this lineup, even without Dupuis, they shouldn't struggle on the power play.
No.
Guess how many power play goals they've scored?
Is it more than Anaheim?
No, it's actually just as much as Anaheim. Zero!
Zero! Goose egg, folks. All right, so we'll put this in, and this is why I wanted to segue this. You're wondering why the Penguins are struggling so badly. And why, when you look at it, and the reason why Boston is going to precipitously fall down into the standings at some point. There's a few reasons for this. Okay, folks. Through the early part of the season, as hard as it is to believe, there are still 2 teams, like we said, that have no power play goals at all. The Ducks may be the most surprising just because they, I believe also, Timmy, have the fewest power play chances in the league.
Yeah.
At 11. I remembered this last night, thanks to Brian Hayward, who, although I don't always like, I do at least respect that he's accurate with his information. Now, here's the fun part. The good news is there's no penalty kill that is perfect in the league anymore. Thank God. Nashville finally gave up a power play goal, so the world can breathe easier now. It's interesting, though, and it's something to note. As crazy as this is, and granted, look, there's some teams that have played 4 games, 5 games, 6 games, so some of these results are a little bit skewed. The Ducks are also among the league leaders in least penalties called for as well.
Yep.
Another sign that it's early. They are tied, I believe, at Carolina. And Dallas, oddly enough, who all have only seen the sin bin 11 times. You know, there's a few odds and ends and numbers and such. Surprisingly enough, the Devils are not at the bottom of the league yet. Keyword, yet. Now, remember, this is as of noontime Sunday. So the numbers will change, obviously, tomorrow. But it's interesting to note that, you know, you have teams like Arizona, who are amongst the bottom 5 in power play chances, they have 25 power plays, Timmy. 25 power play chances. Montreal has 26.
Yep. It's no surprise to see Montreal at the top. I mean, say what you want about embellishing a little bit, but their speed does draw penalties. The third team, on the other hand, this is interesting. For all Columbus's struggles, their power play opportunities and their power play goals. They're pretty damn good on the power play right now.
Yeah,
if they can only find a way to get on that 10 or 20 times a game, they may win one of these games.
Yeah, their biggest problem is the penalty kill.
Yep.
Their penalty kill is just not that good. I mean, it's right among the bottom. You know, 29th, actually. There's a lot of surprises this year. I know it's early, but, I mean, you look and you go – all right, Tampa had two bad games in their 6. Basically, five of the 7 power play goals they gave up were in 2 games, I believe, to Boston and Detroit.
Yeah.
Plus, in that game, they almost gave up a couple shorthanded goals as well. And even against Philly, they almost gave him a couple shorthanded goals. Remember, they had 2 penalty shots on power plays, mind you. All right. One was on a power play. One was 3-on-3. Sorry. But you get the idea. They didn't have full complement on the ice. But you look at this and you go, oof. And I'm going to say this too. You know, there's some of the usual suspects at the bottom as far as penalty killing. You have, you know, Buffalo. Buffalo's not going to ever be very good in the penalty kill until they get some defense in that mature a little bit more than just Rasmus Ristolainen. Toronto's pretty bad. You know, you start looking. Minnesota's funny. Minnesota had a great penalty kill in October last year. They don't this year. But their power play is much better. Go figure. There's some goofy numbers in here. Boston's penalty kill is just not that good, but their power play is great. Yeah. Boston connecting at a 39% clip on the power play is going to last all year.
Yeah, right.
Their penalty kill is at 72 and dropping. At some point,
they'll rise only to fall again, then rise again.
Yeah, I just don't. They're going to be below 20%, but they're going to be below 20% maybe by December 1st.
Yeah,
I can't see this continuing. And when that happens, then they're going to have some major problems because this really is the only thing.
It's the power, their penalty kill will probably be good for 81%.
That's going to improve. That will improve. It's funny because the Devils are 28th in the penalty kill, and it's because, unfortunately, we finally got rid of Bryce Salvador, only to realize the fact that John Merrill's become even worse, and David Schlemko may be even worse than Peter Harrell. So it's not like we really changed anything. It also didn't help that, to be honest, Washington just completely shredded us in that one game. And, you know, today's results weren't reflected, so maybe that will move up a little bit. But oddly enough, the Devils have been one of the more disciplined teams. They actually only have 12, penalties, 12 minors called on them in four games, which is a bit of a surprise considering, to be honest, they're not very fast to the puck. So you would think there would be more penalties. Right, Rick Nash, who knows how to dive better than anybody. But you look at this. The Rangers are one for the season on the power play. That's not a surprise either. Are the Penguins going to be 0 for October on the power play? No. Is Anaheim going to be 0 for October on the power play? Probably not. Anaheim's kind of fortunate, like we said, they're playing a Minnesota team tonight that has a penalty kill barely above 72%. If there's one night that this team should score on the power play, it's probably tonight. Which that game, by the way, is coming up at 8 o'clock on Fox Sports West.
And NHL Network.
Ba-dum-bum. Damn it. That's why I couldn't find it on Center Ice. That explains it. I knew it was on NHL Network, but I was hoping to get the Fox Sports West feed anyway and not on NHL Network. Although at least it's in HD.
Well, you still might be able to get the Fox Sports West network.
Yeah.
If that's the network they're feeding into.
I would think they're going. Yeah, it's generally always the home team. Although it's funny to hear, like, Tom Chorsky and those guys say hoser every so often. But, again, there's a lot of early numbers, and a lot of the usual suspects have just some ridiculous and gaudy numbers. I think the funniest one is this. So, Timmy, the New York Islanders early on have a face-off win percentage of 56%. Who the heck do they think they are? The 2010-2011 San Jose Sharks? Come on. Toronto. Toronto, of all teams, has a face-off win percentage of 54.6. Toronto's actually – this may be the best part in the punchline of the night. This is the other part of the Pittsburgh theory that gets me. I mean, granted, Tyler Bozak is hurt, but do you know that his Corsi is at least almost a good 20 percentage point higher than it was last year? I know it's early. I know it's a really small sample size. Did you ever start to think that maybe it wasn't Bozak last year, the last few years?
Hmm.
Now, Bozak and JVR, James Van Riemsdyk, are playing with a couple guys. I know one of the games they were playing at one point with Lupo for a while. They were playing with Kadri. The line's kind of obviously jumbled now that Bozak's out. But this is a Toronto team that is competitive. They can't score for anything at times. But they are competitive, at least.
I think that's part of what Mike Babcock is instilling in this team. It's not so much improvement, but just being competitive.
But it's kind of funny, Timmy. They were competitive last year in the second half.
Yeah.
They just could not score that crucial goal or keep that crucial goal from being allowed. And granted, this year is kind of more of the same, but it's a much worse team, arguably, than last season.
Mm-hmm.
And the penalty kill's pretty decent and not so good at the same time, but it's early. The power play's awful. They have two power play goals on the year. They need to play Boston, clearly, or one of those really bad teams. They play Columbus. Oh, that's true. I think both their power play goals came against Columbus. Now that I remember it, oh, wait. It might explain things. But yeah, you look at teams like this and go, no. I mean, the goaltending is really bad in Toronto, though. Really bad.
Yep. I feel for Bernier. I really do, because he had potential.
I can't. Yeah, I think he's just ruined. I really do. I think just playing there ruined him. And it's my number one concern with Corey Schneider, to be honest. How long can you keep that level of play up when your team doesn't in front of you? I mean, granted.
To a degree, Cam Ward, too. We talked about this.
Yeah, it does
a week
have an
ago.
Effect. By the way, looking through, I mean, Dion Phaneuf leads the team in points at 4. Yeah, I know, Timmy. I know I'm waiting for it. But, yeah, 4 points. And this is where it gets downright evil. I mean, I took a look at this. Obviously, Toronto's 1-3-1. They're almost in last place. They're now tied with the Devils for 3 points. But here you go. James Reimer has an .890 save percentage. Bernier has a .900 save percentage. Over the last year and a half, Bernier has a .907 save percentage, and Reimer has a .904, Timmy. If you consider that the NHL average is .914 right now, or thereabouts, even if you do their adjusted save percentage, they're still a good ways below average. It's not good. I mean, it the funnier part may be this. Bernier is on a pace to give up about 31 shots per 60. Reimer, on the other hand, it gets kind of goofy with his numbers, is on pace to see about 28.6. He actually sees less shots a game than Bernier does. But it really doesn't matter because the scoring chances are just are still pretty high. At times they hold people, at bay. But if you look at this, here's some odd numbers. Tyler Bozak, who was a minus 35 over the second half of the season last year, okay, is a plus 3 right now. And Riemsdyk is even, by the way, just for people wondering. you know, and you go through, Dion Phaneuf is a +4 to me.
And so is Leo Komarov.
Komarov
only averages here over 13-40 a night.
Right. You know, but he plays mostly, you know, he plays some tough minutes,
yeah,
to be fair. But it's just like, you know, people jokingly call him Uncle Leo for a reason. He's a likable guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a pretty good player. It's just sometimes he goes a little bit, you know, he does go a little bit over the edge, obviously. You know, he's their leader in hits by far and away. He averages 4 hits a game in his limited amount of ice time. He's a physical player, but has only taken 2 minors.
Now, here's a problem with the Toronto defense.
Mm-hmm.
When Matt Hunwick is averaging more than 21 minutes time on ice per game, yeah.
Right, but to be fair, again, he hasn't been bad.
No, he hasn't been bad at all, but I don't think he can sustain that.
No.
Given
no.
his track record, and eventually we'll see him. We'll probably see that number lowered to under 20 a night, maybe even 18 or 17.
Mm-hmm. Which makes sense. Now, another player that's been good, but unfortunately has been, you know, kind of shuffled around a little bit, is Nazem Kadri, who does have 3 points in 5 games. He also has 27 shots on goal. Now, Kadri has around a 9-10% career shooting percentage in the last couple years. He's at 3.7 right now. His PDO is like 94. I mean, it's low. It's really low. I mean, you know, save percentage when he's on the ice is barely 900. So it's actually maybe 93.7 or 8. It's like right on the fence at 900. It may be less. Again, they played last night, so I don't, you know, don't have the full numbers. But you know, you look, if this team was just a hair better on the power play, how much more value could they get for a guy like – I still think they're going to trade Kadri. I really do. You know, he's an RFA next year. I don't think he's part of the plans, to be honest, in Toronto. There's a lot of teams that would take a guy like him, and I gotten into a number.
Ontario would have him right next to him on Coach's Corner.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
If all else fails.
But I'll tell you this, I agree with him in this case. I do think he's vastly underused still, even in Toronto. I think he just needs to go somewhere where he has a chance to play top minutes and on a halfway decent team. This isn't a good team. It doesn't help your trade value when you have all these shots on goal and you have no goal, you know, virtually no goals. He has 1.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hopefully when they get into a stretch of games where they play some teams that are on their look, when they play Columbus, they look a lot better, to be fair. You know, obviously they're not the only team, and et cetera. I mean, look, you know, we talked about the Devils already. And the Devils, this might be worse. I mean, this is funny stuff. Even, all right, let's put it this way. Here you go, Timmy. Stat of El Deo. What may be scary. You look at this. Adam Henrique has been pretty much the one catalyst for this entire team. Half the offense. It's strange to look at, but it's really true. He's half the offense, Timmy.
Yeah.
He's the only reason why Stempniak scores there. Is because literally Lundqvist cracked his pants when he saw it was Henrique coming on a 2-on-1. And look, Henrique, all he does is score against Henrik Lundqvist. Because as everybody knows, and I'm sorry, Ranger fans, but it's true. It's Henrik. Henrik. Not Henrique, like Henrique gets over. Henrik. I heard it again today. It's incredible. It's how can you get this wrong all the time? By the way, over at Odd Shark, they did a poll today before this Devils game. Out of 1,554 people, guess how many picked the Devils, Timmy?
How many picked the Devils?
Yeah.
I'd say less than 20%.
Try 0%. Zero.
Well, maybe somewhat accurate.
I mean, technically, it's a fraction of zero because I think like five people picked them out of 1,500 something. But it's such a small percentage. It's like 0.03% or something like that. They just rounded it to zero. Said that was it. But, yeah, it just goes literally to show you. I mean, the Devils basically are whichever line Adam Henrique is on and Corey Schneider. And that's it. The rest of this team is just horrendously bad. And it's not to sound cold and pragmatic about one team, but it's really true. I mean, you know, we said the same thing about Boston. You know, them even strength basically is just it's hideous. Even with Chara back, it's still ugly. It hasn't really been fixed. It's just they played a little bit better last night at 5-on-5. Basically, they kept the puck from going into their zone, which would cause problems.
They only allowed 2 5-on-5. That's progress, if you ask me.
No, you're 100% right. You're 100% right. By the way, obviously after today, you know, Henrique has four points on he's accounted for 4 of the 8 goals. He has 3 goals and an assist. To be fair, he really should have had the goal there because I think he should have shot. I think he would have beat Lundqvist anyway. Yeah, actually, that's the funny part. The only the only reason why Stempniak scored is because actually Henrique had Lundqvist beat high glove side, and because Lundqvist was cheating over so bad, there was no way he was getting over. If Stempniak gets anything on that shot, it's in, and sure enough, Stempniak did. And you know, not surprisingly enough, you look at this, and you know, basically training camp tryout now has 3 points. It's not great. It's not pretty. And this team is ugly to watch. I mean, the first 60 minutes were brutal. They really were. Elias is skating at least with less restrictions. I still don't know when he's coming back. But Travis Zajac's awful. I mean, I'm sorry. Just is. He is a checking center. I don't care if you're paying him $5.75 million. He is a checking center that does not belong on a power play. Or at least if he is on the power play, he's on it very minimally. Because you look and it's pretty ugly. I mean, it's not a good sign. I mean, this team is just bad. You know, Zajac in 4 games, I think, has 5 shots on goal. So he actually has less shots on goal than Sidney Crosby. To be fair, Camilleri hasn't been bad. I think he has 4 points in 5 games. But because he's not he's not shooting at 20-something percent right now, fans are up in arms. It's kind of tough. It's early in the year. These numbers get skewed a lot. A lot of players for New Jersey have looked halfway decent. The problem is their bottom 4 defensemen are bad. It was a relief. It's bad when your fans cheer that a player is out, like John Merrill. Fans are actually relieved that he was out of the lineup of today's game, and that kind of makes you cringe a little bit. I mean, I think the biggest thing with New Jersey is Henrique has to work on his faceoffs. He definitely needs some kind of coach to work on faceoffs because the only major guy above 50% really is Zajac and Gianna, to be fair. And to be honest, Gianna is not a fourth-line center, so the numbers should be skewed a little bit. But, you know, Joseph is below 50%. Henrique is way below 50%. But then again, Henrique's kind of getting the Galchenyuk effect to me, where he's being thrust into the center role because it just works better. And again, this is a team, ladies and gentlemen, that had 3 5-on-3 opportunities in the last two games, and they generated 0 shots on goal. And they still won today. They had a 96-second 5-on-3. They had no shots. They had no scoring chances. They didn't do much of anything.
Except win.
And to be honest, that's really all they did. They do not generate high-danger scoring chances. Today, ironically, they had 4, actually. Well, it might have been 5. I don't know if they count it the I don't think they counted the overtime chance as a high danger scoring chance. Sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. Warren Ice has a little bit of a quirk, I think, because it's 3-on-3 that they don't consider it because it's five, you know, it's not 5-on-5. But 5-on-5 high danger scoring chances are hideous with this team. Matter of fact, I think against Washington. All right, here we go. Here's the rundown of the games. Against Winnipeg, it was 7-2 Winnipeg. Washington was 6-3. Nashville was 4-1. San Jose was 6-3. Today it was 8-4 Rangers.
Ouch.
Okay. You know, Corsi 4 even strength was pretty bad, but it wasn't, you know, horrendous. Despite all this, the Rangers had 23 scoring chances today on 21 shots. Now, typically when you look at it, you look at a line, you look at scoring chances, it's usually about 55 to 60% of the shots are scoring chances in that range for the most part. With War on Ice, since they've been counting it a little bit different because they count low-danger shots a little higher than most. Nice way of saying low danger shots are those laughable 35 to 40 foot perimeter shots or more that somehow hit the goalie. You know, medium danger is you're getting closer to outside of the perimeter, you're getting closer to the goalie, and then high danger are those 15 foot and less almost point blank shots that the goalie goes, ah, crap, I'm screwed. But in a roundabout sense, that's low danger, medium danger, high danger. And then there's like the Royal Road and all that other la 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 stuff. But nah, that's for another time. But overall shots on goal were actually dead even in this game, 5-on-5 to me. It was actually both even at 21. And as I kind of said to Sean Hartnett earlier in the day, I was like, the Rangers actually got sucked into playing god-awful AHL hockey. And that's basically what the Devils are basically playing AHL hockey. They cannot get into an up and down track meet with any team. They really can't at this stage, and they have to play this a certain way. The Rangers did block 16 shots today.
Well, that's a positive.
Why am I not surprised? Dan Girardi, I think, is day to day. Literally, he got clocked with a shot and then got hit by two different Devils right after, which I still think is the way you have to attack the Rangers. Literally, you have to shoot right at them, and then if you see a player that looks even anywhere near vulnerable, you have to attack them.
Yeah.
And it's part of the reason why I think the Rangers are only a slightly above 500 team this year. If they do anything above that, it's because of Lundqvist. Yeah, but you look, again, you look at some of these numbers and you just go, oof. Face-offs, not surprisingly, the Rangers won that, you know, even strength. You know, penalties were about even. Hits were actually even in this game. So really no team dominated over the other. It was a pretty physical game overall. And again, I mean, you looked at the fun Corsi numbers, and it just gets uglier. By the way, Travis Zajac's Corsi in this game was a game worst minus 11. Yeah.
Minus 11.
Minus 11. I again, I've said this all along. Not very good.
No.
Yeah, and I'm sorry. You know, he's a nice enough guy and everything. The house being sold was not an accident, that sort of thing, et cetera. And, you know, these are the problems that we see. I've said this for a while. They're not the only team. I mean, look, you know, the Rangers this season have been kind of playing with fire as well. It's just, you know, today they ran into just a really bad team, and they just fell into that trap. Kind of like last night a little bit with, you don't want to say this. Pittsburgh kind of had the same thing last night. They went up 2-0 quickly and just fell into that trap. Gradually, Toronto drew them in and, you know, had chances to tie that game throughout the entire second and third period. And just didn't. You know, Tampa Bay and Buffalo on Friday night's another great example. I'm sorry, Saturday night. Sheesh. But, you know, same basic idea. Buffalo comes out, outshoots Tampa Bay 16-3. And, yeah, Tampa Bay gradually, slowly turns that game. But it wasn't by any means a dominant effort. And this has been the theme over the first week and a half of the season. Road teams have been playing better and better and better. I mean, you look at some of these standings and go, well, this road, you know, this team has an awesome record on the road. This team has an awesome record on the road. This team has an awesome record on the road. You get the idea. I mean, to be fair, you know, Montreal's won four in a row on the road to start the season. I can't remember the last time that's even happened to start a year. Ottawa's 3-1. You know, Tampa's 2-1, but to be fair, it's early. Islanders are always, Washington actually hasn't played a road game yet. The Rays are 2-1 on the road, but you look at the West and it's like, okay, St. Louis is 4-1. Dallas is 2-1. Nashville's 2-1. Winnipeg's 3-1 on the road. Minnesota's 2-0-1 on the road. You get the idea.
San Jose 3-1, Vancouver 3-0,
or 2-0. Yeah, Arizona's 2-0. The Kings haven't played on the road yet. Got a Kings start with a 5-game homestand. How unfair is that? I'd kill for one of those.
and they only have one win.
They only have one win in 4 games. But that's the thing. It is early, to be fair. You look through, obviously, you know, Montreal's 12 points. They lead the league. Interestingly enough, in the Metropolitan Division, it's kind of quirky because it's so early. But, you know, the Islanders have seven. The Islanders and Capitals are the only teams with a plus goal differential. Everybody else is negative. And they're all right around, you know, zero or, you know, look, Devils are -6. Carolina's -6 already. So that's more than a goal a game in the negative direction. Philly's minus, I mean, look, Pittsburgh and Philly both have 7 goals on the season. Now, Pittsburgh's a little more troublesome because they have 7 goals in 5 games, but they're both under 2 goals a game.
Contrast that to what we're looking out west in the Central Division. No team has a negative goal differential right now.
Exactly.
The only one that's even is Chicago. They have both scored and given up 14 goals.
Yeah. I mean, again, and those teams are scoring at a much higher clip. I mean, look, Dallas is scoring at almost 4 a game. You know, St. Louis is scoring at 3.5 a game. You get the idea. Nashville at nearly 3 a game, Winnipeg over 3 a game, Minnesota over 3 a game. Colorado, you know, well over 3 a game, but they're also giving up well over 3.
Yeah. Well, they are nearly scoring 4 a game, too.
Dallas is the funniest for everybody that killed Dallas. Not for nothing, but Dallas has very quietly won 4 of their first 5 games.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they've given up some, you know, they've given up some goals in the last 4 games. In the last 4 games, they've given up 13 goals, you know, because the first one was a shutout. But their goal differential is still plus 6. That's not bad. I mean, look, St. Louis has, you know, look, granted, St. Louis has played one more game, but they, you know, they've given up 14 goals themselves. So Chicago's given up 14 in 6 games. Okay, they played one more, but still, it's the idea. I mean, it's not going to be that bad. Not that great either. I mean, look, you know, we all can't have a goal differential of plus 9 like San Jose does already. And that's including losing 6-3 last night. And, you know, look, in a game where they were gassed in the third period, it showed.
Where they were gassed, and in a game where, said earlier, Alex Stalock. I don't know if that's even part of goaltender's etiquette. Hockey etiquette.
No, it wasn't very good. But you look, I mean, some of these. Vancouver's a funny one. Vancouver can't win. Vancouver's awful at home.
Yeah.
You know, they lost the game in overtime on the 3-3. I believe that was the Calgary, and then lost outright in regulation. And, you know, somebody asked me, it's like, do I play Miller? I was like, I kind of think that, as weird as it sounds, Miller might win tonight, given that Quick's record against Colorado is brutal. It doesn't matter if it's home or road. So who knows? But not for nothing, I think lost in everything is the fact that even L.A. has only scored 4 goals in 4 games.
Mm-hmm.
So even the game they won the other night, they only scored 2 goals. I seem to remember it was either 1 or 2. But either way, it's the same song and dance. And they started off at home with not too bad. I mean, look, they should have beat San Jose. They got waxed. They definitely should have beat Arizona, and they got throttled. You know, then they lost again. Then they beat Minnesota. Yeah, they finally beat, you know, a decent team in Minnesota. You know, and even that took overtime, Timmy. That's right. That was 2-1. LA had a 1-0 lead throughout almost that entire game, and then gave up one later in the later stages of the game. So, look, it's early. It's not a reason to panic just yet. And I've said this to people.
We're probably going to laugh at this episode by the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, we might be laughing at this by Thanksgiving. We really might. But that's the kind of thing that you have to expect, folks. And that's why we are going to delve a little bit into, you know, some simple medieval half-baked advanced stats and some of the better ones. I'm just putting this out there just yet. By the way, I did want to let people know that, yeah, Timmy, I hope to God that you had Matthew Stafford and Megatron today.
out of all the weeks.
I knew it was coming. It's the Bears. The middle of their defense is so bad.
Now,
there,
I do have 5 guys in my daily fantasy lineup, 5 pads in my daily fantasy lineup tonight.
Yeah. Oddly enough, I did have the Jets defense today, and thankfully they had 4 or 5 turnovers. So
yeah, I had
helped a little bit
as well. And again, guess who they're playing? Who they were playing? A team that just turns the ball over just as much as the Jets.
Yeah, go figure. But that's what we're trying to get at this year. you know, with the show. It's not just talking about, you know, hockey in general, but, you know, things that in hockey that also interest us. Again, one other side a bit, as everybody knows, the daily fantasy battle is raging on. Timmy, I hate to say it, but Haskell and the boys up there in Boston are in some deep crap.
Yes, they are.
And I've warned Ethan of this too. You know, when I talked to him a few weeks ago, I was like, well, maybe it's a good thing you are cutting back on the hockey, because then I'm not going to get in hot water like you guys are about to. And he's like, how do you know? I was like, I know there's a lot coming. And unfortunately, yeah, as it was proven by the Nevada Attorney General, I'll probably talk more about this on Tuesday's Fantasy Hockey X. This does pertain a little bit more because it's a daily fantasy and fantasy show. But I figured just to jump the gun a little bit here. How do I put this in the most gentle way, Timmy?
Mm-hmm.
This fantasy sport is in a lot of trouble. It's not a game ender by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
But is it going to alter the landscape significantly? Yes. You're going to see a lot of mid-range daily fantasy sites get a chance to get in on the ground floor and try to exploit what's going on with the big two or three. And I know Yahoo, I believe, pulled out of Florida officially. They're out of Florida. Obviously, everybody's out of Nevada. You know, there's about 6 or 7 states that now are banned. Illinois is just a rule on it this week. The Massachusetts Attorney General is looking at DraftKings again. The Fantasy Sports Trade Association president has been subpoenaed by the feds. And then they came out with a very interesting statement that between him and then one of the other daily sites known as DraftOps.com, where basically, and they are kind of right, you have to call this for what this is. The federal government, particularly Congress, and your state legislation is pissed off because they're not getting a major piece of the pie from daily fantasy. It's what this comes down to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, look, is it gambling? Yes, to some point it is. To be honest and to be fair about this, there is a significant element of gambling to this.
Now, and it's the same as a sports book if you
right.
put it from that perspective. And I
right.
think that was one of the major reasons why Nevada came down as hard as it did, because of competition.
That's dollars. They want to protect their moolah. It's really not even the – it's really partially the competition, but it's even more the money. They want to get in on this. That's the thing. They want to get in. They have company. They have the World Series of Poker has a daily fantasy sports license already in place. And so do a few other companies in Vegas. They have a license in place already. This was not an accident. They knew what was coming. Other states were tipped off. It's a big problem. And, okay, to be fair, does daily fantasy sports need to be regulated? It sure does. You know how many times I put a couple entries in and don't win because somebody has 50 entries that were scripted?
Yeah.
And they may not win necessarily, but because they're in the contest, it's that difference between winning and just missing out on a GPP tournament. Now, people are going to ask, what's a GPP? It's called a guaranteed prize pool, basically. So if there was a higher overlay, say, if you were allowed only 5 entries instead of 50, and you finished, say, in a 500-place tournament, you needed to finish in the top 90 to cash, and you finished 95th because this guy had 50 entries instead of 5, and you would have finished 50th, and you would have at least tripled your money in the process, you're going to feel pretty pissed off. You are. And I've seen it happen quite a few times, and there's a reason why a lot of people play these 50-50 in cash games. They don't play the guaranteed big money they play the smaller money because they just don't want to be bothered, to be honest. It doesn't mean they're any lesser of a daily fantasy sports player. They're just not stupid. They know what's going on. So in that sense, does the playing field need to be even necessarily? Yes and no. Bluntly put, what needs to happen is you have to have some kind of checks and balances in place. It can't just be the federal government doing it because we all see how they handle things. You have to have some kind
of responsibility somewhere.
You have an independent third party that's in there. That's for the good of the common daily fantasy sports player. Because, you know, it's true. There's a minority of players that win most of the money. That's how it is. You have to tip your hat off that they have the money and resources to play that many entries. You have to. Do you have to cap some of that? Sure. Do I want to go up against somebody that has 50 entries in and I have two? Not really. But if you cap that to, say, 10, would that be more fair? Yeah. And then they could still put their money in, et cetera. It's not a problem. And it could be something that works. It just has to be regulated a little better, and the money has to make sure it's not going into the wrong hands. It's really what this comes down to, and that you share a little bit more, even if it means that they have to take a little bit more of a percentage of say, the rake or the amount that they take in to pay for the regulations, so be it. It doesn't mean that they have to have hammer lockdown regulations here. People just have to relax, and they're not. It's crazy. I mean, I saw Thursday compared to Black Thursday. This is definitely the end. I'm sorry, it's not going to happen. Daily fantasy is not going away. Whether whoever it's controlled by, it's going to be controlled by somebody or shared. It's here to stay. And the hope is that someone gets under control. And, you know, there's other things, too, that are an issue. There's people that sell lineups on the internet. And what they do is, and I've seen it before, they take lineups from sites that I've seen it from three or four sites that I write for. They've taken my lineups and used them and sold them for like $5 a pop.
$5 to win how much? Two, three?
I don't know. I mean, some cases, I know one guy last week won five. I know one over won 5,000. Yeah, he hit for one of the bigger FanDuel tournaments. Not even bigger, one of the medium-sized FanDuel tournaments last week. Hit 5,000 for first place. But hey, you know what? It happens. There does need to be better regulation. It doesn't have to be iron and sickle level regulations. It doesn't need to be controlled like Mother Russia. There just needs to be a separate party that keeps track of the money and what's going in and out and monitoring potential abuse, et cetera. It's like anything else. Look, we have betting all over the place, for example, in Canada and other countries and such on pro sports, and obviously here. But especially in London, I can go walk down the street and there's a bookie right there and I can place a bet. There's no problem at all. Here, I can play the state lottery as much as I want to. And what's on the back in very fine print when you look at your state lottery ticket? There's a number for Gamblers Anonymous. Does anybody find a problem in what I just said? As far as the state lottery and comparing it to DFS, state lotteries are legal, right? Because they make money for the state. It all comes down to money like it always does. And now an industry might be losing a lot of good people Because the government wants a piece of the pie. And it's unfortunate. And amongst the hockey community especially, there's a lot of people that work very hard that are going to lose their jobs. I mean, look, I lost mine from DraftKings probably because of this. And I just didn't know it. They just wanted to go in a cheaper direction because they knew what was coming. And that's fine. I would have liked a little more notice. I would like to have found out, like, you know, somewhat more than a day and a half before the regular season started. Might have been nice. But it is, you know, it's how it is. And what I'm seeing now, at least behind the scenes, is a lot of the small and medium based daily fantasy sites are getting in on this thing. And they're going to admit that they you know, it's gambling. They're going to, because they know where the money's at. Who cares if daily fantasy sports is considered gambling or not?
Mm-hmm.
That's not even the issue at this point. It's, do they want to share a little bit more of their money with the government? And the second issue is, and maybe the most important one is, how do you protect the people that legitimately want to play and the people that legitimately want to write about it?
And how do you really protect, make sure the workers don't go into other daily fantasy leagues and play on their own?
Yeah, the only thing I could think about that would work is a geoblock, and even then, geoblocks have their own set of problems.
Yep.
Now, that's something that has to be addressed. That's going to take time. Obviously, if they're at work, they can block the, you know, they could just block the internet sites in question. That's not hard. I mean, you know, you have IT guys for that. But it, you know, it gets a lot different at home. You know, a lot of people bring their work to home. I don't think the honor system's working there, Timmy. We've already seen one or two players that were playing in banned states already. I'm sure there's more.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a process, and this is something that's not going to happen overnight either. In some states it might, and in some it's not. I mean, New Jersey is a good example too. You have one of the most corrupt New Jersey, you know, senators in Bob Menendez, who somehow is not in jail, pushing basically, you know, to regulate daily fantasy sports because they've wanted sports betting for over 20 years in New Jersey, and they need it. You know, with the basic fall of Atlantic City as a viable, you know, tourist town, it's obviously the depressed economy from the aftermath of Sandy. And look, it's still going on. People think that, oh, you know, it's fine. People are going to the shore, et cetera. No, they're not. They're not going at the level that everyone thinks. So, yeah, you have this reality where the state of New Jersey is having problems. Sports betting is definitely a solution. It's not the only solution, but it helps. And I'll put this out there. They're only in it, Timmy, for the moolah at this point. They're only – him and Frank Pallone are only in this to get sports betting passed first in their state.
Since when do politicians ever do it for the money these days? I mean, come on. We all know there are people. Oh.
They're always greasing the bottom line. And that's why we're concerned about – all right, here's the other thing. How far – all right, if daily fantasy sports is banned in some ways and then eventually does come back, in the meantime, who's to say that some senator doesn't go, you know what, let's ban all fantasy sports? I wouldn't be shocked. Somebody's going to try it. You know, because you technically have money cash leagues that would be considered gambling. If you consider the one gambling over a day, over a season, it's still gambling. So, you know, it's stretching the sentence a little. It's stretching the truth. You know, because you've already stretched it. Now you just stretched it like Plastic Man. But it's a huge problem. How far does it go? And that's where you hope that it doesn't. At some point, common sense prevails here. at the very least.
Thankfully.
We can maybe move ahead from this and, I don't know. Leave people alone. For lack of a better word. I mean, again, does the scripting probably need to be scrapped? Yeah, it does. It's an issue. Anytime you trust something to machine, it never ends well. Ask Terminator how that goes. But look, it could be worse. We'll see what happens. Hey, look at it this way, Timmy. There's only one game tomorrow.
I know.
This feel weird. Monday. I think folks, tomorrow, actually, I think I'll be on the first. I'll be on the fourth line. I think I'll be on a podcast with TJ Mechaloon, actually. Mechaloon. Should be a lot of fun. We'll probably talk about DFS again. I'll be on with Sportscasters with Stephen Bennett in the next few weeks, as I'm sure this DFS issue is not going to go away anytime soon, and it's going to change dynamics back and forth and all over the place. So we want people just to be aware. Hopefully it doesn't get banned in your state temporarily. If it does, I like I said, when it got banned in Nevada, I knew two daily writers that were out of jobs right away. The one we're trying to find a way to work him back in with something so that he can play. Nevada has allegedly said that if you do play, they're not going to go after you, which is weird, but.
Okay, so we'll make it illegal, but at the same time.
Right.
We'll admit that we'll look the other way, just like Vermont in marijuana, essentially.
Basically, yeah. No, you're 100% right. It's kind of that way. I forgot there was a cap amount that they would start looking at people. Like if you were winning, a couple thousand dollars, then it might you might suddenly get a knock on your door. But again, we're going into an arena of sorts where we don't really know what's going to happen. We only have ideas of what could happen. It's like the hockey season, Timmy. We don't know until we know. After 20, 30 games, we have a general idea of what may or may not happen, and even then. Do we expect Calgary to be able to sustain all the way last year into a playoff berth? No. Do we expect LA to go into the wilderness last year and just miss the playoffs? Yeah, we didn't expect that. But certain things, outrageous claims that were made early in the season have already been squashed. Interestingly enough, I do believe Anton Khudobin may be starting for Anaheim tonight. So keep an eye on that.
Yes.
That looks like that's confirmed now, actually. So based on the fact that usually the goalie that skates first out in warm-ups is the starting goalie, using the general rule. So again, folks, we did a little longer of a show. Get ready for tonight's 8 o'clock games. Again, that's Minnesota Anaheim at 8 o'clock. Edmonton and Vancouver at 9, and Colorado and LA at 10, which will be a little bit weird. I'm not used to that whole 9 o'clock starts on a Sunday is one thing. 10 o'clock, okay, little bit different, but. Obviously, we'll be back hopefully sometime next weekend, or we may just record something live in an undisclosed location in Manhattan for all we know.
We'll work on it. We definitely will work on it.
We'll see what happens, folks. Till then, for Chris and Timmy, this is the program saying that one last final word that Timmy likes to say.
Aloha.